Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan. Engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is the show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. When you visit the site, you can ask additional questions, even about other shows. You can listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. I've launched a new podcast titled Aspects of Spirituality, which is also on iHeartRadio. There I explain my worldview and what I have learned about life in short weekly podcasts. I hope you'll join me there. Everyone deals with some form of stress in their life. Stress has many causes, but much of it comes from living in a high-pressure society where we set unrealistic expectations for ourselves. Our jobs, relationships, and health issues all contribute to our pressures. The question is, how should we deal with stress? Our guest today is Melanie Greenberg, PhD, and author of The Stress-Proof Brain. Dr. Greenberg is a practicing psychologist and executive coach in California, where she is an expert stress, health, and relationship manager. She uses neuroscience, mindfulness, and cognitive behavioral therapy in her practice. She has been quoted by numerous national sources and is a popular writer for Psychology Today. Dr. Melanie Greenberg. Welcome to the show, Melanie.
Thank you, Dave. I'm delighted to be here.
Now what got you interested in stress?
Well, I got interested in stress because I grew up in South Africa towards the last years of apartheid. So it was a very stressful time. It was a very stressful society. And there's trauma, and there was a lot of transition. There were a lot of people leaving the country. There was currency devaluation. There was repression. And so somehow, you know, my life was just had all these stresses in it. And I was in my 20s at that time. And I had to make major life decisions, like whether I wanted to stay there or whether, like many of my friends, I wanted to leave and go to another country. And so stress just seemed a part of life for me. I had to find a way to learn how to manage it.
So what inspired you to write The Stress-Proof Brain?
So what inspired me was that I have learned so many lessons about stress. I've had so many life transitions in my time, and I see myself as a resilient person, and that resilience comes from having a kind of spirituality, getting in touch with mindfulness and compassion, and learning to trust the universe. And I wanted to share that along with the scientific knowledge that I've gained along the way as an ex-professor and a clinical psychologist. I wanted to share that with other people. I think that stress is such a major issue for everybody these days. And life is constantly changing, and we have to learn how to. And I thought that I had wisdom to share.
We're having trouble hearing, sounds like your microphone is being tapped or touched or something.
How's that? Is that any better?
That's much better.
Okay,
that's great. How do we know? How do we know if we had too much stress? I mean, everybody's got stress, right? I mean, you know, we live with stress. But how do we know if we have too much?
So it's a feeling of being overwhelmed, a feeling that life's out of control, that there's no solutions to your problems, or that you start to feel burnt out or worn out, feeling maybe losing some of the joy of life, or that stress is interfering with your health or with your relationships or with your work. Those would be some ways you might be able to tell.
Okay. Well, so, you know, is there some, you know, can you look at yourself and you can say, okay, you know, I've got some issues, and that's probably caused by excess stress, you know, maybe overeating or, you know, or things like that, or you know, are the ways you can look at your lifestyle and pick that out?
That's a really good question. I think you can. If you're having an unhealthy lifestyle in some way, if you're out of balance, that can be a sign that stress is affecting you. Like you said, if you're overeating, or if you're drinking too much, or if you're not taking care of yourself mentally or physically, you're not getting out, you're not getting exercise, or you're not getting any leisure time. And another sign might be that you have some kind of an addiction, because many people manage stress by turning to addictions of some sort, whether it's drinking too much, eating too much, shopping, sex, you know, other kinds of things. But it's a sense of being out of balance, is my sense of it, or being worn out and worn down and losing your enthusiasm for things.
Yeah, how about relationship problems? Is that...
That's a big one too. you know, if you're irritability it would probably be a very big sign. If you're snapping at your spouse and your kids and your partner. Another thing would be if you're reactive and impatient, you know, if you're in traffic and you're shouting at your driver next to you or making faces.
Road rage is a good example.
Road rage is a really good example, yeah. Or if your fights get exacerbated, you know, when you're having arguments about the garbage and all of a sudden it skyrockets, that could also be a sign that stress is affecting you.
How about physical? How about getting, you know, what if we're getting a lot of diseases? Does it hurt, say, the immune system or something along that line?
Yeah, chronic stress, you know, when it goes on for a long time without a break, or if you're hit by one thing after another, you don't get a chance to recover. Or if you have a chronically stressful job or, you know, a really bad boss, that can affect your health over time. And it can do things, stress can do such a mess up with your health. It can affect your blood pressure. It can affect your glucose. It could cause diabetes. It can cause cancer. And it can create inflammation so that you might have, you know, asthma or rheumatoid arthritis. So it also affects cellular aging. It actually ages you quicker. So there are these parts of our brain called telomeres, and they kind of, the DNA, these strands at the end of the DNA that stress can interfere with and degrade more quickly. And so stress can actually age you on a cellular level.
Yeah, that's kind of disappointing for probably everybody.
Yeah, but then again, it's not only what happens to you, but it's how you react to it is the big thing, so that you can become more resilient to stress. And, you know, it's all, in a way, it's all in the attitude. If you're feeling helpless, hopeless, out of control, that's going to age you quicker than if you see yourself, you know, as a resilient person who can get through this, you know, who might even be able to grow and learn new skills.
Now you mentioned chronic stress. Now, in your book, you talked about acute stress and chronic stress. Let's talk about acute. What are the stressors in acute stress? What are the type of things that what's the difference between the two? And second, what causes acute stress?
So acute stress is some kind of a specific event that you have to deal with, but it's more short term, it's more time limited.
Okay.
And that could be something a challenge that you take on, like you might run a half marathon, or you might give a talk somewhere, or, you know, you might take on some kind of a challenge that's under deadline that you have to prep for, that you're expending a lot of energy, that you're staying up late to work on.
Like a new job. How about going to college? I mean, going to college.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, acute stress can also be like a life transition,
okay,
like going to college. I mean, it could also be writing the exams at college, but
right.
Yeah, one kind of stress is just a normal life transition where there's actually something to be gained from it, like, you know, going to college or maybe getting married or maybe having a baby or retiring. So, you know, it's one kind of acute stress is dealing with a particular transition in life where you have to adjust, maybe develop a new lifestyle, maybe learn skills, meet new people, move away. And that can be exciting and energizing as well as stressful.
But that should go away after a while.
Yeah, after a while you adjust, you get used to the new normal, you make new friends, you have new routines, and so it settles down. And right. So that's not so bad for your body. In fact, you know, you can maybe even feel more energy and think more clearly in the short term. Because, you know, there's an end to it, basically. Right. And that's how our bodies were wired and our brains were wired to kind of react to a stressor, to get all geared up to deal with whatever is happening and then to calm down again and rest.
So it's the chronic stress that's the problem. And the chronic stress, that goes on forever. So what are some of the chronic stressors?
So chronic stresses might be things like unemployment, you know, if you don't find a job for many years. I think that's something a lot of people are facing now with age discrimination or with changes in the global environment.
Mm-hmm.
Also, having a chronically stressful marriage or, you know, a chronically stressful relationship can be very toxic for you. Or having a boss that's unreasonable, you know, a work environment where you have maybe a lot of responsibility but no control over the decision-making or the resources. If you have chronic illness, caretaking, you know, maybe you're taking care of someone with Alzheimer's or with some kind of a chronic health condition or a special needs kid, all of those situations can create a lot of stress for you. And many of them are out of control. You know, there's a lot of pieces of those things that are out of your control, and that makes it worse.
Yeah, okay. So there's all these things that are stressing us, and how do we deal with stress? What are some of the good methods that we can use?
So to me, stress, it's a mind body kind of a thing, that it's in your mind, you know, that you may feel anxious or overwhelmed or challenged, but it's also in your body that, you know, that we have a characteristic stress response where we have increased cortisol or we have neurotransmitters like adrenaline pumping through our bodies and kind of hyping us up. So to me, to properly deal with stress, you need to deal with the mental and the physical. So first thing, I think, is your attitude. You know, it's kind of taking a step back and sort of saying, okay, what resources do I have to deal with this? Or thinking, well, I've got through other difficult things in my life. There's no reason why I can't get through this too and learn to adjust to it. And maybe even seeing, you know, is there anything positive? Is there anything to learn or gain from the situation? And then a second piece is finding a way to calm the stress in your body. And that could be through meditation, mindfulness, maybe through exercise like running, doing nature walking or getting out in nature, or even just turning to people you love for support and understanding. And then, you know, there's also problem solving. How do you deal with the problem? And those are some examples.
How important is being non-judgmental? When we judge people, does that put a lot of stress on us?
Yeah, you know, it can, because it can get us into negative cycles of rumination and negative thinking. So, for example, if your spouse, you know, didn't clean the kitchen, didn't do the dishes, it could just be that your spouse didn't do the dishes. You know, maybe they had a very difficult day. But if you start judging it, you may think, oh, my spouse is lazy, you know, they never do the dishes, it's so unfair, yeah, they're taking advantage of me. And so what happens is the judgments can magnify the situation and magnify the stress and your emotional response into way beyond what it is. and that creates more subjective feelings of stress for you. You feel more out of control or more angry.
You know, it seems to me that when, you know, we have a tendency, we have relationships with everything and really, you know, obviously everybody, but I mean, we have relationships with our computer. We have a relationship with our car. We have a relationship with everything. And what we do is we put characteristics on these things, and especially other people, and we say, okay, this is what I expect that person to do, and that, or that thing to do, or my car to do, and we put those characteristics on it, and when it doesn't happen, we have a tendency to judge it, and then we start. You know, you do a little judging, and judging seems to grow. And and then you really seems like you start really having a problem with something. And people are the biggest example. You know, your boss, you know, you have expectations from your boss. They ought to think so and so this way and that way. And when they stop, you know, start doing things in a way that it doesn't fit your characteristics, it starts eating at you, you know, and then we all stew on it. You know that?
That's a very good way to describe it, I think. I think we all do that.
We all do that. And it seems to me that we put unrealistic characteristics on virtually everybody. I mean, you know, we think we have a certain way of looking at the world, and we expect other people to. And of course, everybody has their own way of looking at the world, and they couldn't follow our requirements if they wanted to, even if they knew what they were. You know, and of course, we rarely tell anybody. So we just sit there and we judge away, and then we stew about it, and then every once in a while, when it gets so bad for us, we kind of explode in some stressed situation.
Sends us over the top.
Then we go over the top. And that's got to be, you know, I think that's one of the big stresses in life is how we judge people and how we judge things. You know, some people will sit there and they'll say, well, I got a terrible car, my house is always falling apart or this and that. And it's kind of the way, you know, we put our characteristics on people. So how do we gain control of all of this? How do we have these innate problems, and as you say, some of them are acute and only last for a short period of time. Some of them last for years, and then they become a problem. So how do you develop some stress resistance?
So to me, it's a function of calming down the part of your brain that kind of goes into fight or flight. So we have a part of our brain called the amygdala that detects, you know, if there's something threatening or if there's a stressor in the environment, and it kind of often sweeps us off balance. Your heart starts racing and your mind starts racing and you get all anxious and often that takes over, so you even can't think clearly, or, you know, you're very reactive emotionally and snapping at people. So you've got to calm that piece down. And then there's another part of our brain called the prefrontal cortex, which can actually help us move forward in a more mindful, planful way, that, you know, we're more strategic, we're moving towards our goals, or we're acting according to our values, or we're, you know, we're working mentally with the situation and taking down our judgments. So you kind of need to need both of those skills. And to me, mindfulness, which is meditation, but it's also an attitude to life, can be the key to the first part, to the calming down of the brain.
So you say mindfulness is not just meditation, which a lot of people think of it as, but it's a perspective. Expand on that. What do you mean by that?
So mindfulness, a formal definition might be that it's a way of deliberately focusing your attention on inner experience
I want to explore
in a kind of compassionate way.
Relax.
What does that mean?
Take things in a big objects in the places I visit.
You think of it as replacing fear with curiosity. So you want to just let things unfold. You want to, you know, sort of stay in the moment. You feel perhaps the sense of trying to be grounded and centered while things are swirling around you. So that if you feel a strong emotion like anger, you don't just become the anger. If you have a negative thought, you don't just, you know, believe automatically that that's the way things are. But you create a sense of inner peace so that you can observe your negative thought, or you can observe the anger that's coming through you. You can breathe, you can back off from it. And with that, you can kind of, it ends up being taken down, or, you know, you can do something to modify it if you would like to, or just let it pass through you.
Because you can understand it a little bit better.
You can understand it, and you can be less reactive, so you're not sort of, you know, automatically screaming at people.
So how do you get a little bit more control in your life? And I think you kind of need that. What are the type of activities and things you can do to, you know, that might be able to help you feel that your life is more in control?
I mean, part of it is if you take any situation that you're facing, it's thinking about which parts of this can I control and which parts of it can't I control, and really, you know, making a distinction. So say you're unemployed and you're looking for a job, you can control, you know, how much you network, how many hours you spend, how good a job you do on your resume, how you update your skills and so on. But you can't control whether you actually get a job completely, because, you know, that's up to somebody else as well to hire you, or there has to be an opportunity. So what I believe is that you want to focus your energy and effort and attention on the parts that you can control, and the parts that you can't control, in a way, try to let go of those. Try to, you know, if you find yourself ruminating about them, try to just go do something else, engage in something else. So that's one sense, just focusing on which parts you can control. Sometimes you can't control anything except your attitude, you know, but you can, maybe by focusing on being grateful or focusing on being optimistic about the future, and, you know, there's a sense of control in that.
Yeah. How about hobbies and sports and such?
Yeah. You can also find, you know, you can add things into your life that you can control, and you can put more focus on those. So, you know, you could do volunteer work, or you could take up running, or you could do a creative project. You know, you could take art classes, you could do a vision board or a collage. So by putting those kinds of things into your life, if you're facing some kind of an uncontrollable, stressful situation, you are, in fact, making progress towards a goal in a way that's under your control, and that can be satisfying, and, you know, that can give you a sense of challenge and mastery.
Yeah. How about self-compassion? How does that play into all of this?
So self-compassion to me is one of the most important things in managing stress, because stress makes us kind of get down on ourselves. You know, we may beat ourselves up. We either become very self-critical, you know, sort of saying, well, you're a failure, why did you do this, how did you get in this situation, you make stupid decisions. You know, we can get in this real negative dialogue with ourselves when we face something stressful, perhaps even blaming ourselves when, you know, a lot of it wasn't necessarily our fault. Or we can get very demanding of ourselves, like, no time to eat, no time to rest, got to keep going, don't be lazy, don't sleep. And, you know, we can wear ourselves out that way. And so self-compassion is a different way of relating to yourself that can make things less stressful for you. One part of it is self-kindness, and that is, you know, just kind of extending the same compassion and understanding to yourself that you might to any other person. You could think about, well, you know, if you're beating yourself up, if you're saying to yourself you're stupid, or think about whether you would actually say that to your friend or to your son or daughter. and I bet you you wouldn't.
Begin an exciting
so try to speak to yourself as you would to somebody you love.
An Ionian sea.
And then a second part of it is the sense of common humanity.
Enchanting
you know, you're only human, you don't have to be perfect. Stress is a part of life. Failure is a part of life. None of it's the end of the world.
Split Croatia.
And give yourself a break. Allow yourself to be human and make mistakes and be affected by difficult circumstances. And the third part is just being mindful about what you're doing and becoming perhaps more self-aware of how you're treating yourself and whether you're looking after yourself.
Yeah. How about guilt? How much guilt does guilt cause us to, to beat ourselves up?
The 12th century cathedral of
guilt can be functional in a particular situation that if you've really messed up, if you've hurt somebody you care about, guilt might prompt you to make amends, to apologize, to repair the relationship. So in that way, that piece of it is functional. But there's also many dysfunctional kinds of guilt, and you know, guilt can stop your enjoyment of life, that you may always be focusing on the shoulds, that you should be taking care of other people, that it's not okay to rest or to take care of yourself or to feed yourself. And so guilt can keep you stuck. That you're always feeling like you're not doing enough, that you aren't enough, and that can exacerbate the mental stress a lot.
Yeah, how about perfectionism? What is a lot of times we never think we do as well as we should on certain things. How does that play into it?
Perfectionism is a really big one. It's a big piece of what can make things much more stressful. So perfectionism means, you know, that you have to do things perfectly, that if you make one small mistake, that, you know, that's not good enough. And so perfectionism would make you want to have, you know, perfectly tidy house and have all the laundry done and be perfectly thoughtful and remember everybody's birthdays. And, you know, if you hand in a piece of work that, you know, to check it five times that there's no spelling error. And to spend hours and hours, you know, on projects or work that you do so that you take away the ability to rest, that you don't have time to rest. And you end up having a lot of worry about, is this good enough, you know, and self-criticism. And so there's a lot of mental stress in that. And if you can learn to allow yourself to be human and to just let go of that. And what I say to people in my practice, why don't you just deliberately make a mistake?
That would be hard for anybody, you know?
Right.
You know, deliberately make, I'm going to screw this up big time, and then let's see what happens.
But what you learn is that you can survive it, or that people will forgive you. You know, or that you can repair it, or you can. So what happens is a kind of exposure to the, and that way you don't have to be so scared of making a mistake in the future.
You know, I think we don't appreciate the real value of our spiritual growth and evolution is our mistakes. You know.
Uh-huh.
When things go well, we rarely know why they went well. We're happy,
right?
Because everything worked out. But we don't know why. But when we make a mistake, we usually find out what it's all about. And we get dragged through all the mud trying to repair it and such like that. But that's when we really learn things. That's how we really grow. I've come to realize that the karma is, you know, goes along with mistakes. And what happens when we make a mistake, we get this karma. And the karma is not a punishment type of thing. It's more of a note that says, okay, this soul made a mistake here, so we'll just tag this, and then we'll give them an experience later on, sometime in life, to redo this, to learn from that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And And so if we could realize that, hey, that our mistakes, you know, let's laugh at our mistakes. You know, they were stupid, but you know, that's why we're here. We're here to make mistakes. I think if we could see that in a more positive light, we'd be less likely to, you know, to stew over things and be guilty about them and worry about being perfect. And I would think it would take a lot of stress off of us.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good way to put it. Mistakes. If you could think of mistakes as growth opportunities or as learning opportunities, I think that can change the whole meaning of it. And you're right. I think we do learn more from our mistakes, especially if you're willing to look at them. If you're willing to really look at why did this happen? Some of it could be some factors outside of you, and then you just have to learn to accept that you don't have perfect control. But some of it could be that you messed up in a certain way, or some part of you got in the way, and then it's working with that part of you. So, you know, if you're holding on to anger, for example, or in bitterness, then that could be something that leads you to mess up in the relationship. But that's something that you can work with. That's something, you know, that over time you can replace that with compassion. So mistakes are learning opportunities. None of us are finished products. We're all evolving.
Embark
and growing.
On a 10-day
and, you know, there's something exciting about it. But just to realize that we're just like everybody else. Venice, you know, it doesn't make... Just because you fail doesn't mean you're a failure.
Right. We're all in this boat together. Some people cover it with other people better, their mistakes. But they don't cover it with their soul and with true reality. We all make mistakes, and that's why we're here to go learn things. You know, one of the things you say here, and it's a real mouthful because it's we need to become, and this is to help our self-compassion, we need to become cognitively flexible, and one of the things, the way to do that is to be integrative. Now, what does that mean?
Sounds like a lot of jargon.
It certainly does.
Feel the spirit.
So cognitive flexibility, I guess you could think about it in simple terms as, are you stuck in one particular viewpoint of a situation? Or can you learn to see the situation from different perspectives? Can you move off your position? You know, are you rigid about the way you're thinking about things? Say, like a political view would be an example. Or can you move off your position? Can you see another person's point of view? Can you take an observer perspective? Can you put yourself in the other person's shoes and feel like what it might be like for them? For example, if you're having an argument with somebody. And that's a very, very valuable skill. And integrative means just taking in information from different sources. So, you know, thinking about perhaps how might I see the situation? What are my needs and goals? How does the other person see the situation? What are their needs and goals? And how might an objective observer see the situation? And when you consider those different perspectives, it's a greater way of coming together with other people, getting off your position, or perhaps adopting a more positive or a more compassionate view of things. So it's a very, very valuable skill to be able to kind of tweak the way that you see things, both in terms of empathy for other people, and also in terms of kind of revising maybe a very negative viewpoint to make it more hopeful.
And of course, empathy for yourself as well.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Empathy for yourself.
Yeah. Now, you've mentioned rumination. Why don't you explain to the audience what rumination is?
So rumination is kind of chronic, repetitive worry. I think we all experience it at times. And, you know, it's like when you go over and over and over something, how's this going to turn out? You know, am I going to get fired? That might be an example of something we might worry about. Am I going to get fired? You know, is my boss going to get mad at me and have enough of me? Or is the firm going to run out of money? Or is my business going to run out of money, for example, if you're an entrepreneur? And so what happens though is that it feels like we're doing something helpful. It kind of grabs us, you know, that it's hard to break the cycle. It's hard to get up and stop doing it. But it's actually not helpful. It actually makes things worse because we're stuck in our heads. We're kind of disconnected, you know, from our bodies or from being in the present moment. We're living in the past or the future. And when you start ruminating, you think of something negative, and then that brings something else negative up and something else negative up, and all of a sudden you're kind of in a negative downward spiral, feeling depressed. So you might think about, well, I messed up on this project, and then you might think about all the other times you messed up, and then you might think about, you know, what a bad person you are, what an inadequate person you are, and how the neighbor is so much better and doing so much better in their life, and so on and so on. So it magnifies everything from one negative thought to kind of a whole ton of things that bury you.
Yeah. Did you ever notice that the things you worry about are rarely the things that cause you difficulty? It's the things you don't worry about because you haven't thought about them that catch you by surprise.
Uh-huh. That's a really good point. Yeah. I mean, things that catch you by surprise, we can't always be aware of everything. And I think life is a journey that we learn how the world works, sometimes through pain. And through going back, you know, but I think it's this back and forth thing. Like we feel like we're moving forward, and then all of a sudden something hits us, and we feel like you're going backwards. But actually, if you can learn from that experience, then you go forward even faster the next time.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you talk about thinking traps as part of this, what causes us to ruminate. What are the thinking traps you're talking about?
So thinking traps are just ways of thinking that we can get stuck in, and there's a lot of them. But it stops us from moving forward. It also keeps us stuck in a particular viewpoint. For example, one of them is black and white thinking, that you see things, you know, in black and white terms as either all good or all bad. And I think people do this a lot. So it's kind of like, yeah, you know, if I get this promotion, I'm a fantastic person, but and a real success in life. But if I don't get the promotion, I'm a total failure. And you don't see the gray. You don't see, well, you know, I have this ability, but maybe I'm not as strong as at that, but I can work on it.
So promotion may come next year or something along that line.
Exactly. Or, you know, or it wasn't up to me anyway. But, you know, the boss had his preferences. But I tried my best, so I've got to appreciate myself for that. So that's one big thinking trap.
How about personalizing? Don't we personalize things way too much?
Yeah, I think we often take blame for things that aren't us. You know, it may be that the other person has a problem.
Right.
So, you know, say if you have a boss that's mean and, you know, very, very unreasonably demanding, and you can start thinking, well, I'm not good enough. You know, I'm doing a terrible job, or I'll never be good enough to succeed here. But actually, maybe, you know, it's the boss. Maybe the boss has their own issues with anger or with inaccurate perspective.
I think when people get angry at us for whatever reason, you know, they very often it's a shortcoming in their life, and if we could just say, well, man, they're having a problem, which we never do, right?
Uh-huh.
We get angry back, and you know, and such. But if we could just see it as their problem and not ours, life would be a lot easier in a lot of cases.
Yeah, it's like not taking in the karma, not taking in other people's karma, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly.
Not taking in other people's negative energy is, and so there's a sense of maybe boundaries, I guess, would be relevant here.
Yeah.
You know, like having a sense of yourself that's, it doesn't have to be so entwined with other people's issues. Or like more sense of knowing who you are and knowing whether you've tried your best or not.
Yeah, right. About scarcity, you talk about scarcity as you know, as something that can be an issue and that we need to concern ourselves about. What do you mean by that?
So scarcity sort of inevitably causes us to make worse decisions when we feel a sense of scarcity. And sometimes that's because there really is scarcity. You know, maybe
Scarcity of what? Of time or money or
time, money, relationships. You know, loneliness can be a state of scarcity, for example, that you don't have enough connection. For many people, I think it's time and money. And so, you know, you're running around, you've got way too much to do. Maybe you're like a working parent. Also, taking care of an elderly relative or something like that. Or even just a working parent or somebody with a new baby. So what happens is you don't have enough time to get everything done. That's just the situation. But it can affect the way we think about things, that we get very into the short term and trying to put out fires and trying to, you know, avert the immediate crisis. And then we don't take the time or have the cognitive energy to think about long-term planning. So we might make decisions like, you know, putting everything on a credit card that solves the short-term problem. But long-term, it makes things worse for us and creates a bigger problem.
Right.
But because of the scarcity mindset, it's just, you know, kind of having this short-term frame of thinking. Whereas being your mindfulness, taking a deep breath and stepping back and taking time and resting our brains a bit can actually help us have a better sense of the long-term picture. And sometimes it's worth putting up with a short-term, you know, problem in, so that things are better in the long term.
So you mentioned in your book about preparing a strategy when you've got a scarcity. You know, I think that's, you know, put a plan together for you know, how to deal with it. I think that's good. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's that taking a step back, sometimes breathing, going for a nature walk or something, and then coming back and thinking, okay, you know, what's the immediate thing I have to deal with? And then what's my long-term goal? So that you don't only deal with the immediate thing, but you think about, well, what's really important here, and say it is saving for the future, but say maybe you're feeling it's something very uncomfortable in the moment, like you have a home repair or something. So maybe it's thinking about, okay, let me, you know, get lots of different quotes and let me look at lots of different ways of doing this. So that balances those different needs for the short term and the long term. It might also be something like just being prepared, you know, like don't go to the mall with your credit card, just go with a certain amount of cash or something like that. Like if you know that scarcity is going to grab you and make you act impulsively, it's taking steps in advance to, you know, to take the decision out of your hands, to force you to make a wiser decision.
You know, it seems to me that, you know, sometimes when you feel all this stress, you don't recognize where it's coming from. It seems like it's the whole world that's just got you running because you know, you're tied up with one thing, you don't have the time to do this, now you're dropping something else, and sometimes it's hard to see exactly where that stress is coming from. It would seem, you know, your strategy here might be to try to break your life up into sections, into pieces, into business and relationship, and maybe it's, you know, you break relationships up, and you break it up into kind of a dozen things or so that you think you know, that you're having trouble handling, and then say, okay, how would I like this to change? What would I like my life to be like in each one of these areas? And then try to say, okay, that's my goal, that's where I'm going. And then, you know, try to put some steps in place that would guide you and say, okay, this is a first step in trying to make that happen, and then try to prioritize it as to what you think would be the biggest way. And, you know, and so your strategy, you'd break your strategy up. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like you've got it's a mixture of seeing the forest and the trees. So you've got to have that big picture. Otherwise, you might end up neglecting your relationship for years on end, you know, if you're only focusing on the financial survival of the kids. So it's having that big picture, you know, of the several things that are all important and that you need to put effort into all of them. And then it's prioritizing. And I think it's also we have to let go of some things. You know, it's very difficult to have everything. Most situations that are stressful, you have to we have to let something go. You have to be willing to do without something, or to be uncomfortable for a while, or to lose something.
Prioritize what you're going to deal with.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now you mentioned attitude. How important is a positive attitude in dealing with your stress?
So, well, I think a positive attitude is probably the most important, because you've got to motivate yourself to keep going. You know, if you just see everything as ending up negatively, what's your motivation to get up in the morning? And so you've got to have learn to have some trust in the universe, or, you know, that things change. Things, if you're stuck in a bad period, it doesn't mean it'll be that way forever. We kind of sometimes have this cognitive error where we think that current trends will continue. And another thing is just that belief in yourself, because as humans, we're wired in with the ability to adjust to things. We get used to things, you know, things that were uncomfortable become the new normal. And so it's believing in your ability to adjust and to learn and get used to things, but also believing in, you know, yourself as a creative being that will find new solutions or will find new perspectives or resources. And, you know, so it's looking at things as a journey and not just getting kind of letting things weigh you down to the extent that you lose hope.
Yeah, we're never given anything that is too much for us to deal with. And, and if we look at it from that perspective, then it's just, okay, how do I go and deal with what I've got? And then we're never, you know, if you look back over your life, you'll see that your challenges are really compartmentalized. You know, we're given a challenge, and then we have to deal with it, and then it's over.
Uh-huh.
And then we get another challenge a little bit later on after we've recouped a little bit, and then it too will be over. And if you look at it from that perspective, I think it's easier to deal with the issues that keep popping into our life.
Uh-huh. I agree. Yeah, it's kind of like thinking, will this still be important? Will I still be worried about this in, you know, in 6 months or 6 years or 6 weeks?
Right.
And, you know, that can help you to get that perspective.
Yeah. How about gratitude? How does gratitude play into all of this?
Yeah, I think gratitude is huge, because gratitude creates a kind of a positive state of mind where, again, it takes away the sense of scarcity. So, you know, you kind of feel a sense of abundance rather than scarcity. And, you know, it's a way of training your brain in a way. There's always something to be grateful for, whether it's, you know, sometimes we get so focused on our stresses that we just lose the big picture. So you might be focused on your finances, but you might forget about, you know, that you have people in your life
good health
that love
or
you.
Something. Yeah.
Or your health or something like that. And so, you know, focusing on the part that's good lifts your mood and it gives you, you know, a new perspective, new energy to manage your stress.
You know, we talked about things like getting hobbies and such like that, getting in control. But how about things like exercise and eating healthy? Is that, you know, is that a good approach to trying to handle stress?
Yeah, absolutely. You need fuel for your journey. Exercise has lots of benefits. It has mood benefits. It has motivation. It can help you feel more energetic and motivated. It can actually make your body more resilient and resistant to the stress in terms of your immunity, helping your body have less inflammation. It can help you think more clearly. There's a lot of evidence of exercise in the brain. So, you know, you can think more clearly and solve your problems better. So exercise and meditation are huge. Meditation can rewire the brain as well, so that you have more control over this sort of automatic fight and flight response.
Okay, we have just about run out of time here. We're with Dr. Melanie Greenberg. Melanie, why don't you tell people how they can find your book and you and what you're doing?
Sure. So, well, you can find me on my website, which is drmelaniegreenberg.biz, B-I-Z. Although I'm building a new one, drmelaniegreenberg.com, that should be available in a few months. My book, The Stress-Proof Brain, is available on Amazon or in booksellers. And I also write a blog for Psychology Today called The Mindful Self-Express, self-express, and you can Google that. And I'm doing a lot of different things. I have a busy clinical practice and coaching practice in the Bay Area outside San Francisco. I also see clients online, especially coaching clients, executive coaching, but also health and stress management and relationship coaching. I'm busy putting in some proposals to do talks. And I'm blogging and promoting my book, and my goal this year then would be to get another contract to write another book.
Okay,
and
great.
In my website, I'm also over the next year or so, I'll be preparing courses and offerings that I can offer people.
Online courses.
Yeah, online courses and offerings for people who would like to delve deeper into some of these issues.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much for being with us, Melanie. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Dave. I really enjoyed it, and I think we're very like-minded on a lot of these things, and hopefully we can help people.
I think you're absolutely right. Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes of both the Common Sense Spirituality Show and the Aspects of Spirituality on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.